Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is December 23, 2 days before Christmas, pandemic Christmas. A wild year. We're winding it up, though. We're doing a lot. I guess this might be, I don't know if we do a show next week. I guess we'll see how we feeling. We got a special guest today who wanted to come on and who, you know, God bless, he's a big star and shit, you know, and he happens to listen to our show. We have Bun B on the show with us today. Thank you for taking the time out right before the holidays. Oh, your tree is bonkers, by the way. I saw it on the gram. This nigga's Christmas tree. He got sneakers on the tree. Like, it's
oh, wow.
Yeah, it really is perfect.
This shit is popping. You and Missy have got the nicest trees I've seen so far.
I mean, that's all Queenie. You know, I don't have any activities. I just had the idea. I was like, yo, I got all this fly different Christmas shit. You know, I want to take a nice picture with it. And she was like, put it in the tree. I'm like, you can't put cereal in the tree. And it's crazy because, you know, every time I have like any little doubt, Queenie's like, whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Let's like, do it.
Queenie believes everything is possible.
And you know what? And it is.
You know, it is good to have a person like that. You know, there's obviously, you know, there's always pushback, but it's good to have a person in your life that believes that you can do anything
you want. That's just, yeah, it's great. Cause you know, everybody got their self doubts and they're not sure. And I don't know. And they said to have the person be like, nigga, you tripping. Go ahead. Let's do this. You know, that's
hot. One day Queenie woke up and was like, I want to go meet Obama.
Oh yeah. I remember you told me this. And you was like, okay, all right, cool. So what's for dinner?
Whatever. Okay. That's cool. Me too. You know? And I would say probably within 2 years, we met Obama. Like she just wills these things into existence.
I remember those pictures and shit. That shit was amazing. Yeah. By the way, because, you know, we hear a lot of, you know, pandemic stuff. Obviously, we live in New York, so we hear about New York all the time. We hear about L.A. because L.A. is a big city. And we hear a lot about Atlanta because they bonkers. But I haven't heard much about Houston, which is the fourth biggest city in the country. How are things down now? You're having lockdowns? Is it kind of, are people paying, you know, paying attention and really wearing a mask? Like, how is the vibe in Texas, or in Houston, rather?
Put it like this. Two weekends ago, Gucci Mane was hosting a party at the hottest club in Houston.
Okay. There it is.
The week before him was Jeezy. So they had Jeezy the Sunday after Versus.
So that shit was flooded.
Like crazy. So now we wide open. We are wide open. You know what I'm saying? So you can live your life exactly how you choose to live it now. You can be extremely careful and be very safe regarding your health right now. Or you can go turn up.
And hit the club and do whatever.
All that. Dinner inside buildings. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Like no booze open, no booze open and ready to go.
No booze popping. Let's go. Wow. Yeah, we apparently the rumor here is we're about to hit another shutdown early January. Kind of like how it was in March. Like no barbershop, no gym, no nothing. Just
y'all got a governor that care. I live in a red state. I live in a blue city, but a red state. So it's very interesting how things work.
Yeah. So it's a lot of clash, I'm sure, between your mayor and your governor.
Oh, without question. We just had a thing come out where the state attorney general wrote to the feds to basically block COVID relief funding for Harris County, which is the county that Houston is in.
Wow, just Harris County?
Yeah, just us, because they knew that there was an allotment of that money being used for mail-in voting.
Okay.
So Jesus.
Because of that provision, he's like, we don't need any COVID relief funding to go to Harris County.
That's shit. Insane.
And that's several million people.
That's what I'm about to say. It's massive.
Yeah. Thousands of businesses. Thousands of businesses.
That's incredible.
Wow.
That's incredible. Let's lighten it up a little bit.
But the weed man's still working.
Yeah, hey, yeah. God bless us getting money.
Get it how you live, baby.
get it how you get it.
Hey, can I get some pralines, though? Like,
would you say some pralines?
Yes, please. It's all my Instagram. And,
So they came out. The flavor is on point, but there was a little bit too much butter in it, so they didn't harden. So they're
moist.
It would qualify as a pecan praline, but not as, like, we like to say pecan candy.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Right? What people will call it pecan brittle, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we call it pecan candy. Okay. So it doesn't count if it doesn't break apart when you bite into it.
Okay, we got you. One more quick thing. How is Premium Pete, we've known for a long time, he's a Combat Jack's partner. How he's put out a spaghetti sauce, or whatever you want to call it. And yeah. I know you used it. How is it?
It's amazing.
It's from his grandmother's recipe, correct?
I think it's his grandfather's recipe. I'm not
okay.
sure.
Okay.
He's
okay.
His grandfather's recipe.
Okay. I got so piece of Premium Pete. I got to give me a bottle.
I'll check that out for sure.
Yeah.
They come in a pack of two.
Okay. I like to see people doing that shit. Like, you know, we got where we're about to go now. We got E40 doing all the liquor. We got all these people doing all these things. So it's nice to see people stretching out. So let's jump into the first topic, which is really one of the main reasons I want to have fun on here, because of both our history with both of these guys, which is extensive and long and very deep. we had Versus this past week with E40 and Too Short representing the whole Bay Area. You know, I mean, just it was very interesting because this is the first Versus that any artist that I've worked with that I know that intimately was on. So I kind of was looking at it through a different eye because I know these guys, like I know them, like I know 40's brothers and sisters, I know his wife, I know Short's mom, like, you know what I'm saying, I know his brother Wayne, like I know, like you use a very intimate, you know, thing with these guys. We worked together so long. And then all the music that they put out, like, you know, I was around and part of a lot of it. So it was just interesting to watch, you know, but I really enjoyed it. But I was thinking, like, I hope people, the Bay Area is such a very unique place, right? It's just a unique, it's hard to, if you haven't kind of been and spent real time around there, you can't even really kind of describe it. It's because it's people kind of say California and they, you know, obviously everybody thinks LA, and I don't think people who don't know don't understand that first of all the San Francisco and LA are like really far from each other. They're like, it's basically like New York and North Carolina in distance, right? So they're nothing alike. The weather is different. The geography is different. Like there's like zero in common besides the fact that they're both in the state of California. And so the Bay has its own really unique style and culture and everything. And so if you don't really know it, I was just like, I hope these people know what they're in for. It's going to be a lot of cussing. It's going to be a lot of shit talking. It's going to be a lot of drinking. It's going to be, you know, very fun, but it's its own kind of thing. I really just enjoyed watching, and I enjoyed those guys getting their flowers because they deserve them. And I had forgotten about some of those records because both of them have so many albums. It was so, I was like, oh shit, I totally forgot about this. I totally forgot about that. And it was really nice. Short 40, what you saw with 40, that's him like basically every day. You know what I'm saying? Like he has his definitely like his, you know, his quiet moments. He's not like over the top like that, but he's a more outgoing personality. Short is a lot more laid back personality wise, but if you catch him at the right time, he literally turns in from Todd Shaw to Too Short. And we saw Too Short Saturday. We didn't really see much of Todd Short. We saw Too Short, which is this, what you saw, like pimp game talking, shit game talking, you're over the top, you know, all that stuff. But I just loved it, man. I just loved the energy of it. But I'm gonna shut up and let you talk about it, Bun, first. Just let me know what you thought about it overall.
Well, first of all, I don't think you could find two artists in hip hop culture that deserve their praise and flowers more than these dudes.
True.
I mean, very few people, just from a music output, right? Very few people have released more hip hop music than these two brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, Too Short in particular, you know. I mean, Too Short's lived the majority of his life within hip hop, like making music actively as a recording artist.
Absolutely. That's literally all he knows how to do.
That's it. I mean, that's all he's ever wanted to do. And that's the beauty.
Yep.
That's the beauty, right? Like, he figured out a way to consistently do it. You know, both of these guys taught us, like, how to get money. Like, that was the basic thing about this whole thing was, like, you got to figure out how you're going to get your hustle on, whatever it's going to be, and get you some money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And I can't thank them enough for that because they were actively doing it in the music industry. You know, I watched the E-40 Sick With It negotiations, like watched them go from label to label. He was in Houston with Rap-A-Lot for a while. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't know that. I was with James. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, he came out here for a couple of days and moved around with the old man. You know,
okay.
Probably more of a courtesy than anything.
Respect.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, hear the man out, whatever. But then they ended up over there with us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learned a lot, like, watching the way that Short would maneuver and navigate through the company, 40 as well. But, I mean, you look at these brothers, and they seem so very different, right? Like, personality-wise, they seem mm-hmm. so very different. But they're very much both products of the environment that they come from.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they are the Bay Area.
Literally.
And they still, at this very moment while we're here doing this Zoom, they still both keep very high levels of respect where they're from. Like, nobody's taking shots at Short or taking shots at 40.
At all.
Right? And that's got a couple of different reasons behind it. But there's a very high level of respect for those brothers from that area. And the Bay has always been, like, the most professional area in terms of music. Like, they've always, to me, I feel like very few areas benefit as much from the music industry as the Bay Area. Like, these guys kind of single-handedly revolutionized independent rap music sales. You know, JT the Bigger Figure, guys like that, these guys were doing really big numbers, right? Just by themselves. They were one of these first media markets to realize that you could do a lot of numbers if you focus directly on your immediate market.
At home. They obviously worked the Bay, and then they worked up. So they did the Bay, they did Portland, and they did Seattle. That was like their pocket. They obviously stretched out to other places, Vegas, but that pocket, which was untapped at the time, you know, it's still kind of untapped in a lot of ways, fed people really well. It still does. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, what it is that these are generally underserved people, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody comes to visit, right? Nobody does concerts. Broadway shows don't make it. You're never going to see Hamilton in some of these areas, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then there comes an artist who kind of locks in. This is not to be political, but this is basically the same template that Trump used, right? You find these people that no one appreciates, no one loves, no one gives any attention, right? And you overtly cater to them.
Yep.
Right? This is why Tech N9ne is a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Tech N9ne's out there getting all that Montana money, North Dakota money, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Boise, Idaho money, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Whereas, because all we want to do is go to Chicago, Miami,
Atlanta,
New York, DC, LA, Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But there's 50 states out there. there's 50 states, and most entertainers only concentrate on 7.
Yeah, that's real.
You know what I'm saying? So that leaves 53 other states out there yearning for attention. You know what I'm saying? And so they were some of the first people to show you how to maneuver in that way. Like, you don't need major labels as much as you think if you're willing to make that direct connection.
Yeah, yeah.
They both operate in the game the way they want to, right? They've always made the right decisions musically. And then it, just from a personal standpoint, like, everybody loves Too Short, right? E-40, to me, the thing that I look at from E-40, and I guess it's just based on where I'm at in life, I mean, can you find a better marriage in hip-hop?
I was going to mention that. He's been with his wife, Tracy, who...
Since high school.
Yes, yeah, who I love is just a great woman. They're 30-plus in, easy, easy. And all marriages have whatever they have, but, like, it's a great marriage to me, not a good, a great. Like, they are...
Find the scandal with E-40.
There's zero. There's zero.
He just doesn't move like that. And they're genuinely, like best friends, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Then you put that up against Too Short, who is the consummate bachelor. Right? I guess that, and that's the nice way.
That's the nice way of saying it. Yeah.
That's the nice way of addressing
it. But Short's a really nice guy. I don't know if people know that.
Well, Todd Shore is a really nice guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Todd is a really nice guy, which might be surprising because he's Too Short, but he's a really nice guy.
Quiet and laid back.
But I will say this about these two brothers. Do not try to drink against E-40.
Never. Never, 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 never. Don't do that.
You kill don't yourself. Ever try to drink against E-40, and don't ever shoot pool against Too Short.
Yeah. Short's a shark.
He's a shark.
That's like the least surprising thing I've ever heard about. Like, I could imagine him just pulling some shit out of his trunk, screwing that cue together, and tearing your ass up.
And talking shit the whole time. He's a shark, man. I remember, to your point about everybody loves Too Short, this was a really long time ago when I first started working at the job. I did promotions. So I would bring artists around or whatever. So Short came to New York, and at that time, it was still record stores and stuff. So I set up like a day run. We're going to go record stores and go to the radio station, blah, blah, blah. So I took him up to Harlem. There's a record store called Rockin' Wheels. It's long gone. It was 125th Street. This is where they sold mixtapes and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yo, sure, we're going to go up to Harlem and check up a couple stores. And he was nervous, not nervous that something was going to happen to him. He was nervous that they wouldn't know him or like him. He was like, man, why are we going? These people don't know me, man. I'm like, let's just go, man. Yo, we walked into the store. And Rock and Roll, like these cats, God bless them, I don't even know where they are anymore, but they straight Harlem guys, they've seen a lot of shit, they don't really get excited about shit, and we walked in with Short, and them dudes was like, yo, Too Short, oh shit, they asked him to sign shit, people coming in, taking pictures, and I remember him just being like, I'm like, Short, everybody loves you, bro. Like, you have no issues anywhere you go. And then the second time we had that type of experience, which was a much bigger one, was Eric Sermon had the record was Short. Uh-huh, yana, yana, yeah. Word is born. And Eric did that record at the Tunnel. And he bought Short out. And I remember the same thing. Short was like, man, fucking Tunnel, these niggas is going to be tripping on me, man. Inca, shut up. These niggas going to be tripping on me, blah, blah, blah. Yo, and Short hit the stage, and niggas spazzed. They spazzed in the Tunnel. And this is the height of the Tunnel. Like, again, I was like, Short, everybody loves you, bro. Like, you're fucking Too Short. Like, who don't like Too Short? Even if you're not like the music, that's, whatever. People respect you. You know what I'm saying?
So, Bun, this is the part where we tell you that we've been trying to tell Sledge that he needs to put together a book of his stories. Not a memoir, but not like a whole bunch of salacious shit, but just like some of those stories of moving around with his acts over the years. I've been telling him this shit for 2 years. Like, we're really on his neck about it. So, you, Merry Christmas. The prolific storyteller that you are as well, and someone who believes in carrying on the tradition of passing on the history of hip hop. We would appreciate your efforts to also convince Jeff that it's time to put some of this on record.
Oh, without question, right? Like, and Jeff, you Thank already you. Know, as long as you don't put Robert in the book, you're good. Like,
I got a couple
of Rob stories. Strangers,
I got a couple of Rob stories too, but I definitely will not mention those now. But yeah, I just, you know, like I said, I was really happy, man, just to see. And you know, honestly, like, you know, from a personal standpoint, it was always it was also a big history of Jive Records. Both of those guys, you know, to be on that platform and play all those records, but for the most part, except some of 40 stuff, you know, was the Little John stuff was Warner Brothers, but for the most part, those were Jive Records that they both were playing. They're part of, you know, the history of this label that's gone now. And it
still exists as an imprint, though, right? Like,
it's done. It's over.
It's never not even an imprint anymore. Wow. No,
and never come. According to the Sony people, when they kicked us out the building, it's done, and it ain't never coming back.
I don't know why I thought it was still an imprint. Damn.
Fuck y'all as a crew or
as a staff, a record label, and a motherfucking
fuck crew. All y'all niggas, get the fuck out of here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's over. Oh, wow. Over, bro.
Can I say something else too?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
You know, this is just a side note. Like the song that you're talking about, the Eric Sermon and Too Short song,
mm-hmm.
like that's a culmination of a whole other cultural moment that a lot of people may not know about. So that was recorded in the studio underneath Eric's rim shop.
Oh yes, that's right.
Right, Atlanta, so Eric Sermon moved to Atlanta, and Too Short moved to Atlanta, right? And so they're coming together is through this rim shop, and through Greg and the guys who owned the rim shop. And so lot of hip hop culture that comes into Atlanta, like that's where they go.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a whole time, like, and Eric Sermon's rim shop was on Peachtree. So it was unmistakable, right? Well, it was very easy to find, very easy to come to. And that's what rappers would do back then. Rappers would go to Eric Sermon's rim shop and hang out and eventually do music down in the studio below. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different videos that's been shot in there. I think mm-hmm. there's a Redman video that's been shot in there.
There's a Redman video. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a Redman video.
And so that was that. And that song comes from that those different cultures, because when Short moves to Atlanta, like him, like Oakland moves to Atlanta.
That's what Nooney came with him, right? Or around the same time. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so, and at the same time, when Eric comes into Atlanta, like there's a big New York contingency.
Yep.
In Atlanta.
Yep.
And and that song is it kind of generates from those culture clashes.
Exactly.
That was a good time, though. That was a good time.
It was.
Wally G was like probably top five rappers in the game back then.
He was on the Chronic album, right?
Yes.
I remember Short came to Oakland and bought Nooney. Most people don't know Nooney because he's very low-key, but Nooney has a publishing company called Noontime, and Noontime had Brian Michael Cox and
people Teddy probably Fisher. Know Noontime if they don't know Nooney. I feel like people, anybody who's an R&B fan, I feel like has heard of Noontime.
Yeah, Jazzy, I'm actually. Right? Yeah, who else now?
Jazzy
Faye. Yeah, like
a lot of that Jazzy Faye era, all of that production, mm-hmm. that whole all era Noontime. Comes from as a byproduct of Noontime.
Yep, absolutely. Nooney needs to tell his story too. I don't, you know, he's always been a low key guy, but and then that leads to Shakir Stewart, who was a student from Oakland. At Clark, he's a Clark kid, not a Morehouse kid. He's a Clark kid, I believe.
He was. I think Shake was Clark. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he's from Oakland. I remember going to the mall with Short and Shakir in Oakland. What's it? The Eastmont Mall, the East Point something in Oakland. Like so, Shakir sees his Oakland people moving to Atlanta. So he graduates college and he gets into the music business and becomes, you know, a superstar until in his tragic passing. So yeah, Short opened the doors for that whole Oakland flood, you know, of executives, even more than artists coming down to Atlanta and prospering. But yeah, you know, so yeah, I just like I enjoyed it a lot. You know, I turned it off after 2 hours because I knew I've been around 40 when he get that gas in him, and that third hour I was like, I know what this third hour about to be, and I'm a pass on this third hour because you know, but the first you know when he 40 get that gas in him, he start talking that talk, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna let y'all enjoy that part, you know. But
and I don't think people really know who E-40 is, right? I don't think people really like, not just from him as a recording artist or him as a businessman, but him as a person. He's one of the most likable, personable people you could ever meet from any walk of life. Like Earl is a very easy person to get along with. He's very approachable. And he welcomes you in with open arms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he comes from a very big, literally big, but also numerous family. And they're, and they're all the same. Like
all the same.
You know, Shot, Sugar, they're all very lovable people. And they're very fun people to be around.
They are.
Right? Like, Earl takes what he does seriously, but he never takes himself seriously. And to watch him loosen up, and that's the funny thing about Versus, right? Like, Versus is, to me, it's never even really about the music. Because the music is you know, is selective, right? It's, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I think it's personality that really wins.
It's about the energy. Absolutely.
On Versus. And I think the only time that personality didn't work for somebody, I think, was probably Nelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't think, I think Nelly having a bad connection and eating the chicken wing. Nelly, Mo is funny as shit.
Yeah, like, yeah. Mo, Nelly's a great guy.
Nelly's like a really, really fun person to be around. Not saying that Chris isn't, because Chris is as well. But I don't think Nelly's real person. Like, when you watch Lil Jon and T-Pain, you got to really see them be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I don't think Nelly ever really had a chance to do that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And Luda was in his full, Luda was in full Chris Lover Lover radio mode.
Absolutely was.
He was in personality. He was in, like, you know.
You have to prepare. Let me say that. Like, you can't just show up with the music. Like, you got to prepare to not necessarily introduce yourself to people, but you have to be prepared for this competition, the way you move in the room. Like, you have to really, some people do not know what they look like. Some people don't understand their energy, their body language, none of that shit.
Yeah.
And they might know, like, one very, song.
Yeah. Yeah, and they come across very awkward in these moments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so you just really got to have a drink or two. Like, don't take it too seriously. You know what I'm saying? Outfits are very crucial.
Very, very, very. You know, when Short came out with the A's jacket, yo, I was
very
like,
hard to fuck with that. It's gonna be very, very hard.
Yo, that was like the equivalent to in New York, like Hove coming out, like putting on a rock chain. Like that A's jacket, that satin A's jacket means so much to that area. Like when in Short, you know, dropping that with the hat cocked, I was like,
and it's the Short Dogs in the house. Like,
exactly.
Like, this is like the penultimate Too Short era.
Yep. Yep.
Right. And like, I don't have an iconic outfit. This is like Chad coming out doing verses in the white mink.
In the white. Right. Exactly. It's like, oh shit. He dropped. And you could hear, like, you know, Fab, Mr. Fab and them niggas, whoever else was in there, like when he came out, they were like, yeah. He put on the jacket. Yeah, nah, it was
and
it was
the great, Duke man. And the Dookie.
Yeah, and the Dookie chain. Exactly. Yeah. Nah, it was great, man. I was a nice way to end the year for Versus, I thought, you know. And sidebars, some under low key undercover shit. Larry Jackson, who puts all these things together,
is from Oakland.
He's from the Bay. You know what I'm
Larry
saying?
Larry doesn't put them together by himself.
No, I'm saying, but I'm saying,
on the Apple side.
I know, but I'm saying, but he's from the Bay.
So
it meant a lot. It was the Larry. Oh, that shit meant a lot.
They flew out on the private jet. Did you see that?
Like, I saw that. He put Short on the PJ. Like, if he was like, nah, nigga, you don't worry about it.
We're gonna do this right.
Exactly. You all shit is covered. Yeah.
I love
fun. First of all, hi, because I came in late. Hi.
Hey.
Secondly, is there anybody that you want to see that hasn't come up yet?
Well, mine. I got a Versus coming up.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Ah.
Okay, wow. No, you can't tell us who
wit.
Oh, I want to guess.
Yeah, I don't want to know. I don't want to know who wit. Don't say nothing. I don't want to know.
Well, Swiss said it. Swiss said it in the comments.
Oh.
Oh, I'll go back and look.
Verses. But yeah, but it's going to be UGK and A Ball and MJG.
Oh.
Wow. Oh my God. That's perfect. Wow.
I figured it would be either Ball and M or I'm about to hit you with a bar. Either Ball and M or Paul and M, which is 3-6. I thought it might be 3-6. So
if you remember when this all started, Paul put out the idea that I think him and Crazy had been talking about 3-6 Mafia versus Bone.
Oh, but
So okay, he put in his own already.
I get it because they had the whole supposedly devil thing in it.
And so when this all started, when these things first started, I reached out to Ball, and Ball hadn't seen Versus yet, so I kind of explained what it was about, and I was like, "Yo, I think we should do this with each other, right?" And we were planning to actually do it on our own, and then Versus kind of caught fire,
right?
And so I reached out to Swizz direct, and I was like, "Yo, would you want to put this on?" And he's like, I don't know. I'm going to have to get back to you on that, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, I like the idea. Let me just figure out. Because the whole thing was trying. There was so much that started happening once they got momentum.
Yeah.
He was like, he understands the idea of it, but he couldn't commit.
Of course not. I understand that. I respect that. Yeah.
And I think now it's perfect, right? Now that we have done this short and 40 and this Jeezy and Gucci, right? I think we're in a better place because season one was about the women.
Yeah, yeah.
Season one of Versus, this was all about the women. And women are the majority viewers of Versus.
Which is why the women episode, the two women episodes are the biggest ones.
Right.
You know, because women.
Yeah, that was an aha moment with the Jill Scott and Erica, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
This is the demographic. This is the core demographic.
Mm-hmm. Well, not just the women, but the fact that it's a older demographic. What was throwing the tech powers that be off, and even the music world off, was that, you know, because it started on the production side, because it started for the heads and then went into the R&B space and then came back around. Because, you know, they did their biggest one before Jill and Erica was Primo and RZA. And so it's like, but, you know, these are people who, most of them, you know, the Teddy and Face one really confused folks because, you know, these guys are 30 years in the game. They haven't had hits in however long. There's no metrics that tell you this amount of people are going to watch this. And same thing with Jill and Erica, even more so, they don't even have Hot 100 hits like that. They're not crossover artists. So everybody read white people was looking for the data. Where's the data to explain this? They couldn't understand. They can't, because they couldn't quantify. They couldn't wrap their, when I was writing the cover story for Billboard, the EIC of the entire publication, she was like, well, can you go back and give us some, put it up against if it was a competition reality TV show. And I'm like, no, that's not what this is. I'm not doing that. I'm not framing it like that, you know, but they were looking for a monetary value, a data value, and they could not understand just the culture. They couldn't understand what that meant. So I'm happy that Swizz and Tim are continuing to find those culture touch points instead of being we're just going to put up, you know, this hot person and this hot person, we're going to put up these impactful people, you know, together for people to learn from and for the nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like Bun said, it's dope because now they're going into regions now, said it's the Bay. It was, I forget the one you just said previous to that. Atlanta with Gucci and Jeezy. Now it's going to be kind of the Mid-South and Texas with you and Ball and them. I'm assuming at some point we're going to get a Miami thing with maybe Luke and somebody or whatever, you know, or the Chicago-ish thing. We're going to get these different regions, which are all these important Philly, you know, we're going to get these important regions of the culture as well that deserve their shots too. So it's great. It was a great way to end the year, man. I'm happy.
Especially after this whole Ashanti, Keisha Cole, COVID debacle, right?
Yeah, exactly. And people were ready for that one too. People were ready. You know, people, again, it's because it's.
Oh, it's going to be a lot of wine. It's going to be a lot of wine drunk.
And a lot of, that's my jam. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot
definitely
of.
Definitely had my Tommy Hilfiger on. I was ready.
He was ready to go.
A lot of drunk texting.
Exactly. A word.
You know, we should have never went out like that.
Right? Exactly. I know you're married now, but I'm just saying, you know.
I could have gave you that too. We could have had that too.
We could have had that too. I know what I'm saying? I don't know.
It's just
saying.
Got me thinking to about when.
It's just remember, I was looking at some old pictures. And, you know what I'm saying? There's going to be a lot of that going on. But yeah, man, like I said, it was just great, man. You know, from a personal standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, it was a great versus.
As soon as 40 started dancing, I'm like, here's the meme.
There you go. And it became a meme.
I said, well, that's the meme right there.
Right there, right there, you know? All right, cool, man. But I don't know if you want to stay, you got to bounce. We're going to just jump to a couple other topics.
So I got it, man. I'm good.
Okay, cool. So,
I watched these Housewives just for this.
Okay. Let's jump into it. So again, peace and love to Earl and Todd and their families and happy holidays. So Real Housewives of Potomac. Inka, I'm going to let you lead a little bit on this one. Go ahead.
I don't know if I should lead on this one.
Why not? You can do it.
Two of the reunion was not as cool as part one. It felt filler. Like we could have had a two-part reunion instead of a three-part.
It was a setup for part three, which you look like it's going to be nuts. For sure. And that's when part three is supposed to be 90 minutes, too. It's going to be super nuts.
That's a little bit of a production thing, right? Like, if you can squeeze three shows out of two,
yeah.
Then you squeeze three out of two.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's more advertising things.
The more commercials, the merrier.
Yes, yes. So that's really, so a lot of times, and I don't know if we've said on the show before, but these reunion shows are literally all day. You know, Jeff has been to them. Yeah, Nye's been to them. Yeah.
Like, all day into the night.
Literally, all day. We will get to a venue at, you know, maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. People have already started the day already. Mm-hmm. We're probably not leaving there to close to 1 a.m. in most cases. So it's a lot of footage. I say all that to say there's a lot of footage for them to dissect and edit.
Yeah.
Well, Bravo has started to put the timestamps on it. So they show the wake up call at like 5 a.m. The girls are getting there at 6. Getting the makeup and stuff together. Their first call is like 8:30 or 9 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then they break for lunch and they come back. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It's a lot going on. So you say you didn't love this episode as much.
I didn't love it. I don't know that we got a bunch of tea. You know, I'm there for the messy.
Well, the most of the mess came at the I mean, it was other mess too, but most of the mess came at the end with Candace with the crying shit.
Oh, I was gonna ask what that whole thing. With Monique, what, like, y'all know I didn't watch the season. I've just been taking it off of y'all and Twitter. Mm-hmm. But when Monique was trying to explain her issue with Candace, and I guess her issue all season with whomever, it didn't make sense. It didn't add up to me.
Okay, so what happened was it was kind of two things. So Candace and Monique had beef last season because Candace, as you see, has a slick mouth. He talks mad shit. And she started, I forget how it started, but Monique started to kind of get at each other. And
she said it was about Sharice?
No. I'm talking about how the initial beef started.
Oh, yeah. I remember when she was pregnant and she was like, I'll still drag
you. Yeah, I'm dragging all that. Yeah. So they made up at the end, in the reunion last season.
Yeah, I watched last season. I just don't watch
it. Yeah, okay. But then this season, it started back up again. I guess it was some stuff said on Twitter and blah, 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 blah. And what also happened was a rumor started to spread via this woman named Gigi, who was Monique's friend, former friend, who had been on the show a couple of times, like small roles, who was spreading a rumor that the child that Monique miscarried, was a child by her personal trainer. She was saying that Monique and her personal trainer was fucking around. Monique got pregnant and then that child was miscarried. It wasn't Chris's child and blah, 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 blah. And she's spreading this all around. Of course, she spread it within the Real Housewives of Potomac circle. And Giselle, of course, ran with it as she does and started to spread it to more people. And then Sharice, who I got to give some love to because we went to Morgan together, piece of Sharice.
We know.
Also started to spread this rumor as well, I think as a way to try to maybe get back on the show. And so then Candace had a, was it a birthday party, I believe? Some type of function, and invited...
A one-year anniversary party.
Anniversary party. And invited Charisse to the party because her and Charisse had become buddies, for, you know, at some point. But she didn't tell Monique that she was inviting Charisse. So Monique felt the way like, yo, you know this woman has been spreading rumors about my marriage, causing strife in my home. You and I are supposed to have made up and be cool. The least you could have done is told me she was going to be there. And then I could have, you know, came or not came or just been prepared to see her. But I walk into the venue and I don't even know this woman's going to be there. And I see this woman who's causing all this strife in my life. And I know it's got me feeling all type of ways. And then that's what kind of to set Candace and Monique into this terrible downturn.
Monique also believes that there was some meeting before production started where they were hatching this plot to bring up the rumor on the show.
Yes.
Because I saw that part and Andy was like, but it wasn't on the show. And Monique was like, but they and Andy was like, but it wasn't on the show.
But it was on, but it was on the show because they did a cut. See, Bravo was fucking Andy off. I guess maybe he co-signed it because Bravo, he would say it wasn't on the show, but then they would do cutaways and show Giselle spreading the rumor.
That's what Monique was saying, I think, was that that Giselle brought it up in the testimonial.
Yes, and she did. They showed the footage of her saying, word on the street is blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? So for Andy, and then they would cut back to Andy being like, yeah, but it was never on the show. It's like, nigga, like, it's footage.
That's
on
the show.
It's so
but let me ask, just for clarity, was that footage of her in a show or was that footage of her not?
No, it was in a show. It was on an episode. Yeah, it was on an episode.
Because Sean is saying that a lot of testimonial footage doesn't make it on
there. Yeah, but that one did.
Okay, that's why I would want to clarify because that could be a little bit of a tricky situation. And remember, you know, he's an EP, so he's not seeing every piece of footage. He's not in the field. Right, like Andy is far beyond.
Yeah, of course. And I think he was looking at it as it wasn't a plot line on the show, per se.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's what he meant. Like it was an aside.
Yeah, but it was
all it takes like, is an inkling for people to start doing that kind of research and getting the blogs going. He knows this is a socially driven show,
absolutely.
So for him to act like, "Oh, we didn't do anything,"
it was kind of like, "Come on, bro."
We know he's the evil genius.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it had to have aired because Monique wouldn't have access to privileged footage. So the only way she would have been able to bring it up is if it airs on an episode.
Yeah. So it was so, and then that just kind of started the downturn of their relationship, which ended in them, you know, Monique whooping her ass. But I you know, look, I when I watched Candace get her ass beat and watched the reaction to her of herself getting her ass beat, it's clear that she's never really had a fight before. And Monique has. Because when you have a fight, you get your ass beat. But, and again, you can't keep talking shit, and not ever expect consequences for that. And
you got to cash that check eventually.
And she was mumbling through the whole shit the whole time.
You're so traumatized,
but you talking shit the whole thing.
Time. Like the whole episode, too. She was like mumbling, talking. I'm like, ain't, but didn't this girl beat your ass, though? Like... Why is you still running your mouth? This girl clearly beat your ass the whole world apart.
And when
when they show this footage, you finna get triggered. And now you can't handle it.
Now you crying. I gotta leave. I can't handle it. Like, yo,
now you got your folded tissue.
She thought she was above that.
Exactly.
That's why she reverted to hood rat and ghetto, you know what I'm saying? Yep. And all that type of stuff.
It was an aesthetic. She's not really that. It was an aesthetic.
Exactly.
She knows production is gonna like block for her at the reunion, which is why she's
there. Exactly. Yeah. She know, and even on previous to her getting her ass beat, like you said, it was an aesthetic because she always assumed because security's here, we're on camera, Monique wouldn't actually whip my ass. You know what I'm saying? So I can keep talking, keep talking, because she ain't really never gonna actually do nothing. And then she did. And then she's like, holy shit, this girl actually whipped my ass, like on TV. And again, that's when it went to like, you're a hood rat, da 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 da, and you're a fucking bitch, and you're fired now, you're fired, and all that. It's like, yo, you kind of, a little bit.
Sean could probably speak to this, right? Like, I think a lot of these people don't believe that the physical confrontation is ever gonna really happen, right?
Especially on these type of shows.
Right, right. I remember my wife was somewhere and she was with some friends and somebody was filming for a show here. I'm not going to get into name of names or whatever. And so one of the girls at the party started talking crazy to somebody trying to give themselves like a storyline or something, mm-hmm. right? And the girl was legit about to fuck her up, like, period.
Yeah. Like cameras or not, I'm whooping your ass.
I don't know what's going on here, but I'm finna bitch who you talking to kind of a thing, right? And like after they kind of like settled it all down, the girl was like, I'm sorry, I was just trying to, you know, do something that might get me on the show and all
she
that.
Actually admitted it.
Yeah.
Wow. Go ahead,
yeah.
bro.
might not want to do that in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, that has always been a fear in those concealed carry states, nigga, because you don't know what might pop off and where it might pop off. So as a risk assessment, you might not want to do that. But also what happens is usually what will happen is that security is sort of consistent. So one of the things, and we kind of know this in being around, you know, hip hop, right? Like the reason you have to have certain guys involved in security at the club is because they know who the players are, right? They kind of know what's popping, who got beef with who. And it's kind of the same thing with a lot of these shows. They kind of have to know who's who, who's a part of whose team, you know, what the issues are. And some of these are security concerns because you just don't want it to turn into, you know, nobody wants a fight. I know that that's what people think, but that's, I can assure you that no one is expecting or encouraging a fight to occur.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was saying. I was like, you know, these people are in this space and this girl doesn't ever consider, like, I don't think at any moment that she really considered that this would get physical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because she thought they were doing it for TV.
We're doing this for play. And sometimes with certain people, like, you just not going to talk to me crazy, my nigga. Like, I will really slap the shit out of you.
Exactly.
For real.
Yeah. In real life.
Yeah, in real life. Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Because this ain't real life for you.
Right.
Like, everybody, like, we walk through life together. But we all have moments where, like, we're all on here right now together in real life, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's five different dynamics of life happening right here. You know
Absolutely.
What I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So some of us might be in a good, peaceful, no problem. And some of us might be in, no, my nigga, what is you doing? You just stepped, you know what you
Yeah.
Like, some of us might be in this moment a little more prone to go there than mm-hmm. others.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I also think that, you know, and Sean would understand this, this is a framed conversation mm-hmm. that we're watching, right? Yeah. So yeah. we're only seeing the conversation through the lens that we're allowed to see it through. The room that they're in is occupied by other people.
Yeah.
So they know if I'm here, right, and she's there, but dude and them is right here that y'all can't see off camera.
Right.
She ain't, even though I know this chick would try to fight me, she ain't gonna make it to me anyway.
Yeah.
In this scenario. So yeah. I can go as reckless as I really want to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because one swing and it's over. Whereas when not even that.
It's
you're
like
not even getting a swing in at a
yeah, because you're 10 feet away from me and security mm-hmm. is 6 feet away from me.
They were absolutely behind the set. Mm-hmm. I can assure you there was at least 2 to 3 guys that are on call behind that set off camera that you do not see that are in here. And also in a situation like this, you know, you make sure that, you know, Monique and Candace are not in like the rooms next door to each other, right? Like you just do, there's just so many different ways. This to me is the easiest risk assessment in the history of television, right? Like you should be able to handle this no problem.
Mm,
Cause it's so obvious.
It's obvious. Yeah. Right. I'm real curious to see how next week is going to go. Because Chris, Monique's husband, comes out of there on fire. I saw a clip for next week, and it was the house this is how on fire this nigga was. So they showed him all kind of coming out, setting up, like getting ready to tape, right? And, you know, it's like, hey, and Dale's like, hey, Andy's like, hey, so-and-so, hey, how you doing? How you been? Hey, Ray, getting the Ray the fist bump. How you been? Blah, blah, blah. And then Chris comes out, sits behind Monique, and he's just kind of sitting there. And then Andy brings up the Last Dance. And he says to Chris, Candace's husband, hey, did you see that Michael Jordan documentary, man? It was great. And Chris, Candace's husband's like, yeah, it was really dope, man. I watched all 10 parts. It was hot. And then he turns to Chris, Monique's husband, and says, Chris, did you see the Michael Jordan documentary, man? It was really good, wasn't it? And Chris says, I don't know about no Michael Jordan documentary, but I know some things better start changing here. There's going to be some real issues going on when we start taping again.
Oh Lord!
So this nigga's on 10 from the door. Like I'm tired of y'all talking shit about
my wife. Like I'm not even doing
small talk. I'm not saying he's right or wrong, but I'm saying he came out of there. He came out the gate on fire, and they show like a little clip. It looks like he gets a little he's a big ass dude. This thing's a former NFL player. This thing is like 6'4", 6'5", 300.
Nigga, these are former All Pro. Nigga, like that's not no regular. That's
no
not
regular
no
nigga.
Fat nigga, right? Like, that's like he gonna get out of breath real quick type
no,
fat nigga. Like,
no.
Like you, I mean, for Chris though, I think, you know, Chris is he's a traditional man. He makes that very clear.
Yep.
And one of the things about men like that is that if their wife is wound up and that shit is permeating in the crib,
mm-hmm.
they wound up, baby.
Yeah,
they wound up. And
what we gonna do?
This shit gonna end because I don't want this trickling into my crib.
I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this in my house.
I'm tired of this in my house.
Exactly.
So ironically, somebody who follows us, or one of the three of us, Sean and Jeffrey, said that they know Monique and what we were seeing was actually the opposite. It was her carrying the house into the show because of frustrations with Chris. I don't know. There's no proof, but this is what they said, like kind of early in the season.
Mm.
I mean, it could be. I mean, we've discussed that there's a dynamic that it doesn't seem like she. I've always said Chris has never wavered about what he wanted from start to finish. He has never changed, and sometimes people grow and they change and they see things in a different way as they get older. And it seems to me like she seemed a little sort of contained and confined and
mm-hmm.
a little frustrated. And she has these very small children at home. And I mean, I'm pretty sure she has help in the house, but not in a traditional nanny sense, right? Like she doesn't have like multiple people sort of juggling household responsibilities. And so I think that there might be some truth to that. But I also get very uncomfortable when people, I just feel like there's certain shit that you just don't need to say, right? Like,
I'm
not saying that that person don't know them, but like if they've come to you in this, you know, with this sort of, I don't want to say secret, right? Like, because that's probably the wrong word. But if they come to you in confidence about some shit, I just feel like you ride that out. You let them vent. And I think that's what happens, right? Like, we're taking people venting at the peak of their frustration and making that the sole dynamic of their relationship.
Right.
And I think that that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I agree. Let's jump real quick to Real Housewives of Atlanta. You want to take this one, Inka?
Not really. I don't like anybody on the show anymore.
You don't like the show?
It's not an enjoyable watch.
Apparently the ratings are down badly.
Like, I don't really terrible. See anybody talking about it.
Badly? Yeah. Let's be relative.
Well,
about
badly is opposed to the peak, I should say.
Well, that's
still making money. You know.
This is always you have to take some nuance and some context. Have a drink, Trav. You have to take nuance and context for what we're saying. Down, right? Like,
okay.
You have to look at is the viewing shit. If the viewership down across the board, is viewership down? Is viewership down? About- you know what I'm saying? Like. Like there has to be context when we couch that information. We can't just say, you know, yo, the viewership is down drastically.
It's over
without giving.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, you know, because we could literally say that for a lot of seasons.
Yeah, for, well, a, lot of, for a lot of shows.
The interest is down.
Yeah.
I see the social traffic, even caring about what's going on with these people.
I could have used a longer break from them, frankly. Not for nothing.
Legit.
Is there a designated villain on this show? Like,
right now, the designated villain looks like it's, of course, going to end up being Kenyon some kind of way. But more right now, the designated villain right now is Drew's husband.
Oh, Mr.
And
Pittman.
And the girl LaToya.
That nigga is.
Pittman is the savage.
Wow. That nigga's.
Man, my man went.
And everybody's in agreement on that.
My man went full, you don't understand the black man's plight, to explain his 3-day disappearance from his old lady.
And this was like, Florida.
Nigga, you went full, you don't understand the black man? Like, nigga, that's the card you put on this one?
And that's right. why I call you for 3 whole ass days.
3 days? Like, bro.
If I'm missing for 3 days, I'm finna be missing for real.
Yeah,
no, seriously. Like, the goddamn... Because the goddamn gall, like, that would be, if I was on this show and that happened, and my mama watched that shit, she would come and escort that nigga out my house. Are you kidding me?
That's the worst thing. Her mother lives with them, so she's seen it in real time.
Her mother is a pastor that lives with them.
I've been with Mona for 20 plus years. We've had arguments.
Yeah.
There is never... Just out of my pure, just out of the pureness of my concern, to not contact your wife for days on end, my nigga. Like, to not, okay, we good, everything okay? We still mad about this other shit, but yeah, that doesn't stop your responsibility to ensure that your crib is straight, my nigga.
Yeah,
like,
you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then all that other shit is after that.
Exactly. Like, that was just wild to me, man. And honestly, to be able, and what I think was bothering her was that she couldn't, not only could she not find him, but she knew he was able to monitor her.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So there was like this weird, it was like this weird shit happening with him being able to monitor the cameras and, you know, see inside the crib and all of that shit. And you guys, I mean, like, you know, like, that's crazy to me. Like, yeah, that's crazy.
It's the same.
As far as I'm concerned, you violated our vows. Like, as far as I'm concerned, that's a violation of our marriage vows. Cool. Like, you don't tell me you leave the house. You stay.
Yeah, the nigga didn't even say he was leaving.
You don't tell me, like, you just stay wherever you was at. At that point, like, for what? What are we doing? And Sean would say, what are we doing?
Well, and Tampa, bro? Tampa?
I went through this over here. We had talked about the fact about me going somewhere, and I talked about the exact time that I was going to leave to go somewhere. But I was on a call when I left.
So you didn't actually get to say goodbye.
I was in the living room. So I'm in the middle of the call. I grab the keys. I go get in the truck. I roll out. And like 5 minutes later, my phone rang. I'm like, hold on, it's my wife calling me. And I'm like, yeah, what's going on? So we just leave it now? We just... just walking out the door. We're not saying bye or none of that shit.
Ain't give me no kiss or nothing. Nigga.
Like,
go on.
Like, when you had to go in a rush like that, you can't even say bye, nigga.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and then this
and
one,
that
then
was nigga, appropriate, Bun. Yeah, that was appropriate.
Oh, yeah, she was right.
Nothing toxic about it. Like, that made... Oh, and I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't say bye. Like,
yeah, because you was on that call, yeah.
And this, like, you just had to run somewhere, right? So I'm upstairs and I'm in my studio room. So she had to go somewhere. A friend was downstairs earlier. And then so she opens the door very slowly and casually and has like a handwritten note, right? Like, let's, you know, hold it long enough for me to read the note. And like, you know.
And now you're good. Now everything is Gucci.
Because everything is Zoom. Everything is Zoom.
Exactly.
So she know once I grab the laptop and start walking around the house, I'm finna probably be on a Zoom.
Yeah. And then the nigga doubled down this week. And so what? I don't know if those have been seeing. So this week they're in the process of looking at new homes, and there's one home that they want to buy. So They're talking about it, and she's like, "Yo, so what's happening with the house? Like, you know, did you hear anything?" And he's like, "Yeah, you know, I got to get inspections done," and blah blah blah. And she's like, "Well, I signed I guess it's like a pre-letter, kind of saying that you're really interested in the home, and we're gonna get the, you know, start the process." And so she's like, "Yeah, so what did the real estate person say?" And he's like, "I don't worry about that. You just pack." And she's like, no. I want to know, like, what she, he was like, "Oh, you know, I got to get," he kept saying, "I got to get a lawyer, and I got to do this, and I got to look at this." And she said, we, we're moving into this house. And he's like, "Oh, I'm never going to say I again. I'm moving I from my vocabulary then." He's basically like, "Yo, you don't need to know nothing about none of the details. Just pack." But number one, I'm sure both of the money that they have earned is going into this crib. So she's obviously going to be an owner anyway. Number two, that's a scary thing for her, because it's almost like he's trying to probably do some slick shit.
So this is how women end up in marriages. Exactly. With their name not on the property.
On the deed. Like, exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
This nigga passed away, or this, God forbid, you know, they get a divorce or whatever. And she realized, "Whoa. I don't know nothing."
Come on, Sean.
Go ahead, bro. Here you go.
That guy usually doesn't just start doing that sort of shit.
Oh, no, absolutely.
See what I'm saying? Like,
I mean,
like,
this is the same nigga, like I said, just went to Tampa for 3 days and told nobody.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I'm not, again, my big thing is this person being consistent? Are they being who they were when you guys were dating? Okay, and if it was all good up until this point now, to where, you know, it's always all good till it ain't all good, like, I don't necessarily know if you can get all in a tizzy because he's being consistent.
And but remember, I'm almost
positive.
There was no dating. They got married, what was it, like 3 months in?
They got married. They dated. Yeah, they dated for 3 months.
They got married six months,
and she was already pregnant by another man when they got married. So that oldest child, who I don't think they really show on the show much, it's not his. She was pregnant with the oldest child. Look at bro's face. She was pregnant with the oldest child when they met. She broke up with the dude who was that child's father, and 6 months later they got married. So they dated for 3 months, they were engaged for 3 months, and they got married. So they didn't really date, bro.
So I imagine that in some form or fashion, that's kind of being held over her head, right?
Gotta be.
Like, I'm taking care of the son
that ain't really mine. I hold you down when a nigga shitting on you, blah, 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 blah.
He's really combative about, like, little shit, too. Like, I don't think that was a big thing, her asking.
Yeah, she wasn't arguing with him.
I can imagine. The handle. Right? Like, there's different things. Like, my wife and I will go somewhere, right? And my wife.
Wait, by the way, how long you and Queen been together? Because y'all been together forever, too.
Oh, yes. About going on 25 years.
We've been married for
going on 18 years.
Yeah, y'all deep in the game, too. I wanted to make sure people understood that this ain't somebody been married for 3 years. You think it's been.
So we'll go to certain places, right? And Queen will be like, "Look, we finna be over here. You know, so and so and them gonna be here. I want to stand over there and talk about this, this, and this all night. Don't ignore me at this party."
Right.
Right?
These is the rules, my nigga.
Right. And so I can imagine going into these scenarios, right? When, like, agreeing to be on this show, where the wife is like, "All right, look, I need you to act like my husband. I don't need you to be Mark on this thing," right? And initially it's like, "Yeah, okay, whatever we got to do. I'll do my best."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then slowly but surely, because you're constantly, you know, being followed with these cameras, and there's a certain parts of your life. There's only so much of this you can continuously do until something happens and you become who you always
become. Mark.
Yep.
Right. Yep. You know what I'm saying? So you're not Drew's husband. You're the individual.
Yeah.
Right. Because the husband on these shows is kind of walks in. It's usually in the kitchen while they're cooking, or they're folding some clothes or some shit like that. And I got into it with so-and-so today. What y'all got into it about? What y'all going to do, right? You know, what you going to do about that? And some husbands be like, you know, "Well, I hope that shit work out.
I'm out.
I got to go to the man cave because the Steelers play tonight on Monday Night Football. So hope all that shit work out, right?" like not really trying to be involved,
right,
with this, with all of this stuff. And then there's Monique's husband who's like, "What? What happened? Oh no, we gotta, we gotta figure this shit out."
Yeah, and then this nigga,
and I get it because you know, like, I'm a husband. I'm not allowed to put my wife in these compromising positions. I'm not allowed to not allow her to speak her truth. I'm not allowed to cause her discomfort purposely, right? So when you see other people do that shit, you're like, hold up, this, like, I mean, you don't really care who it is, but you know that there's only so far you can go in certain situations. Like, look, don't be playing with my wife like this, because you're playing with me.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to let y'all do this shit until I realize that y'all can't figure it out. And then, and I'm me. I'm like, okay, where the husband at?
Yeah. What we finna do here, bro?
Yeah. Like,
like this shit ain't, like I said, this shit ain't going to keep trickling into my in crib.
Situation. I need, because y'all don't know how to figure this shit out. So where's the husband? Let me see if he want to handle this like a man or what he want to do. Yeah. She bought that life. I'm a supporter, so I don't care who you with.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Look, we fighting, nigga. Like if she fighting,
we fighting.
We'll figure out what she did later on. We're fighting, my nigga. Like just for clarity's sake,
right? Like had a fight and then get in the car and be like, "But what'd you do?"
Yeah. We figured that. That shit is minor now, nigga.
Yeah.
Blow
in the car,
in the car, right there.
In the car. Like, well, babe, you know you probably shouldn't have did that, but that's in the car.
Yeah, we gonna let these women talk, right? We gonna sit back. We ain't gonna have no opinion about nothing. Soon as you decide to voice anything about what's going on in this scenario,
it's a problem. It's a problem. It's level 10. Yeah.
Especially so, women. So I don't. I'm from that era. I don't approve of men getting in women's business.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same token, like if the two men got a grievance, let them work it out. They may not fight it out, but they might need to yell it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Let them do that. And the women, I'm out, because I know Queenie can handle the argument or the repercussions if it gets physical. So I really got no dog in this fight. I'm really, if I say something, it's really to save the other person.
Yeah, it's like, you might want to chill. You might want to chill.
Yeah, like you're about to cross a line that I don't think you realize you're walking on. You're standing on this line right now. I'm very shocked that she hasn't popped you already.
Yeah.
So
take your
shit. This reminds me of, did you guys see the fight in the checkout line at Walmart?
Yes. Yes.
The dude, her husband,
yeah, her husband,
out of the like handicap assist motorized chair to get between his wife and the woman. Like, I don't think you want to do this, man.
You don't want to do this.
Like
that's how real it was. That's how real it was.
But then you saw then when it popped off and his wife was tearing her up. He was like, no, don't break him up.
Don't call the police.
Let him fight. Let him fight. She wanted this shit. She getting this shit.
Yeah. I really tried to save you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, in fairness, old girl earned that ass whooping.
She absolutely
did. Okay. Yeah, she was so dramatic. Like, you got to take off your coat twice and do the thing. Like, just whatever.
Yeah,
when a real fighter knows you want to cover them braids up.
Yeah.
When two people are across from each other, they already know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't fight, you already know whether or not the other person can fight. A lot of these screaming matches that I've seen in my life are usually between two people that I don't think they even realize the other person. They can't fight, and neither can the other person.
Mm-hmm. So they just waiting for somebody to be like, yo, I man, you
lucky. Somebody to hold them back. You lucky. Right here.
Yeah, all right, next time.
You can't tell me when you're looking in the eyes of somebody, like just eye to eye, face to face, you don't know whether or not that person is going to beat the brakes off you.
Yeah. You only know if you've been in a fight before, though, Bun. If you've never been in a fight and you just always talk shit, you actually don't know the line until you get hit,
okay.
like a Candace.
That's about to say, Candace. You should have looked at Monique and been like, okay, it's enough.
If you've never been around fighting people, I've not been in my life. I've been around some fighting bitches, so I know when somebody is really about that shit.
Well, I think there's a difference between can fight and will fight. I don't think Candace thought she would fight.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Right? Okay. She thought she was safe in that cocoon of production. She would never cross that. Yeah.
That was put together to protect her. And even when there's not security, there's different PAs on the set. Different
people there.
Around, right? And everybody kind of knows. And I think this woman honestly thought in this setting that it was just going to get very loud and very flashy and that somebody was going to yell cut and separate them or something.
Yeah.
But and I guess that speaks to what Naeem is saying is that if you've never been in that scenario, you don't know what's about to happen to you.
It's like with Kenya and Portia. Like Kenya, you know,
with the scepter.
Be poking at her and then want to, you know, play victim when Portia was ready to drag her ass. And it's like, you can't, with some people, you can't go with so far. Mm-hmm. You really can't. Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't understand the idea of that. Like, not. I don't understand the idea of just at least assuming
that it could pop off,
that something could happen.
Yeah.
Like, how could you can really walk into these scenarios and have these conversations with the idea that nothing is going to physically happen to you. Like, that's a dangerous way. I don't know. For me, I guess I come up different, but that's a dangerous way of walking through life.
Yeah.
Not enough said. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Inka.
The most horrible things you can say to a person, she said on camera in that show with no consequences. Like when she said to her husband, "You're just like your deadbeat dad. I wish we weren't together. F you, all that."
Yeah.
When she said to her mom, like, "I hate you. You've never done anything for me," and nobody went upside her head then. So why should she think that this is any different?
That Monique would be
talking
different.
Across a table at like a winery to Monique.
It surprises me how many people in the world have actually like never been punched in the face and shit like
that. No,
especially people with fucked up attitudes. Like, yeah. how do you get slapped?
At least a slap, like. That's the problem. I mean, listen, I'm not advocating for violence, but back in the days when you knew somebody be waiting on the corner for you at 3 o'clock, as soon as that bell rang, mm-hmm. Watched your mouth a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it changed your interactions from then forward.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, I wanted to just mention real quick, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, the movie on Netflix. I watched it. Did any of y'all watch it?
Yeah, me and
mom
watched
it.
Okay,
you were planning on watching it on Christmas Day, but go ahead and talk about it.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
I know the play and everything. So
yeah, it's basically kind of very similar to Fences in that it's really like a play on film. It's not.
It's an adaptation.
It's an adaptation, but yeah, exactly. But it's kind of, you know, I thought it was more of a like a. I mean, it is a movie, but it's very much in play form.
It's the play. It's the play.
In
we're not really concentrating on locale.
Yeah, no, because the locales are in pretty much all inside.
Everything's in theory, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in the night, I guess it looks like the mid to late
1920s. It's 1927.
Yeah, yeah. Ma Rainey was a blues singer of note of that era. Her and Bessie Smith came together, but Bessie Smith kind of became like the superstar of that era. Ma was like more like a cultural figure. Like, she definitely made her money. She had her audience, but Bessie became the megastar of that era. But, you know, it shows Ma coming into town and the process of her recording. And it's Chadwick Boseman's last performance. He plays this trumpet player in her band who has, the young guy, he has visions of grandeur of his own. So there's a big clash there. But what was interesting is, it's kind of like the more things change, the more things stay the same. And I'm talking about as far as the music business goes, right? So they go to this place to record. It's owned by this white guy, Mr. Richman, I think his name was. I forget the name of the record company. And, you know, back then, there was no pub. So you come in and you record 2-3 songs and they pay you like as a day worker for that.
Like a work for hire.
Work for hire. And that's it. And, you know, you walk out. So, you know, Ma Rainey's very tough and firm about what she wants and what she will and won't do and how she will and won't do it. And it's nice to see that because she's smart enough to know, you know, this uneducated woman from the deep South is definitely smart enough to know once I walk out this door, I got nothing. Like, I got nothing else to say because she walks out at the end without signing the release papers. And they're begging her, like, please sign that release once they, you know, obviously we have to release once they can't put the music out. And they're like, please, 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 please. And she, like, grudgingly signs it because she knows, like, okay. And they paid her what she wanted, which I guess would be the equivalent of probably, like, almost, like, $3,000 in today's, you know, money. But that's it. Like those records, she could have sold 45 million singles and she wouldn't have gotten a dime. She didn't get a dime from it. And then the other publishing shit, which was some slick shit, yo. So Chadwick Boseman's character, he has these songs that he's written. Because the clash with him and Ma comes because he wants to basically like make her songs more hip-hop.
It's like the old versus new.
Yeah, yeah. Her songs are very blues and slow. And he's like, oh, I wrote this different arrangement to this song. And it's got a lot more tempo. I got this intro. And it's going to make people mm-hmm. dance. And she's like, nah, fuck that. I don't, that's not what I do. And he's like, nah, but I'm telling you, like, the young people want to dance. Like, they don't want to just kind of do that blues shit. And she's like, so they have a big clash. And so he, in the meantime, he's written these songs with these bounce and this movement to them. And he's talked to the guy who owns the record company. And the guy says, yeah, I want to record these, right? And then by the end, the guy's like, nah, I don't think they're for me. You know, I give you like $5 a piece for them, but I don't really, you know, right. they're not for us. We're just going to keep doing our thing. And the guy's like, yo, like, he said, the guy's the owner of the label says, I had my guys come in and play them. And when I heard them, I didn't really like the way they sounded. And he's like, yeah, but I didn't play them. Like, you got to let me play it with my people, you know, to give it the feeling. And he's like, man, I give you $5 a piece for a man. And, you know, maybe not. And so he takes, you know, like five, you know, I guess 20 bucks or whatever, 25 bucks, or whatever, shoves it in Chadwick's, like, you know, suit jacket pocket. And Chadwick's, of course, like really hurt. You know, some other stuff happens I won't tell you about because I don't want to totally spoil it. So, and one of the songs that you kind of hear him working on throughout the play, he's like, it's like, some my jelly roll.
Jelly roll.
Yeah, he's working on it. And so, you know, there's a bunch of shit happens that I won't spoil about. Yo, the end of the movie, it comes up.
Rule number 4,080, because you about to spoil it right now.
Well, no, I don't want to spoil what happened.
You're literally about to tell.
No. But I'm saying I don't want to spoil what happened with Chadwick in the other.
I know, but you're still about to tell the last scene of the movie.
I am, but there's a whole bunch of shit.
It's a spoiler. No. It's a spoiler, Jeffrey.
Bun, do you want to hear it?
It's. But if the listeners don't.
All right. Fuck y'all.
It's a spoiler.
All right. But, okay, Bun. When you watch the end of the movie, call me. All right, call me.
Yeah, no, that's not a problem.
Let's move on.
I'm gonna do that anyway. So
yeah, move on. Let's move on. Go ahead, Sean.
I watched it. It was good, but it felt a little empty a little bit.
I wouldn't watch it again. I put it like that.
It felt a little empty. It felt a little it's very difficult for me to kind of put my finger on Viola's performance. But it definitely did not give a lot of context, and while I know that it's an adaptation of the play, this platform had the room to give some context to her story, to the story itself that was taking place. It was, you know, it felt a little empty the way it kind of came across. Like you said, I wouldn't necessarily watch it again, and it wasn't bad. It was great performances, but there was something lacking. I don't think everything that is a play translates to film in the same way. I think that stage actors have a very different ability than I think film actors, and you can kind of see that in this.
Okay. I think one of the things about it is that unlike the other August Wilson plays we've seen go to screen, like Raisin and like Fences, those took place over a period of time. This is one afternoon, right? And I think the fact that it's one afternoon in one location is part of what makes it feel so much like a play, right? It very much feels like you said, it doesn't feel like a film. It feels like a play on screen. And what I mean by that is, and I think like not everybody.
There's a lot of long monologues, that. You know.
Yeah. Like the dialogue and, you know, there not being like extra things happening in between and all of that. It's one afternoon and, you know, I could almost visualize like this side of the stage going dark, this side of lights come up, this side, you know what I mean? Like the way they were switching between the characters and the interactions. And they tried to add a little bit of context to the front end, showing her coming from her hotel and all of that. But yeah, this again, because it's like one afternoon, it's everything that's happening is built around the fact that Ma is recording this album. And not over a period of time where you see characters grow and change and react to things and deal with consequences and all that other stuff. It does make it feel a little bit more limited.
The last thing I'll say is I think it's very important when you do specifically period pieces about Black folks that dialogue is done correctly. Mm-hmm. And they really hit it out the park on this.
Yeah.
Ruben Santiago Hudson, I don't know if you guys know who he is. He did Lackawanna Blues. He's the guy who plays Denzel's body man in American Gangster. He's right. Denzel's driver.
Okay.
He's well versed in stage. He's been in billions. He's a legit actor, but he also understands that dialogue, and you can see how easy it flows between those actors, right? Because they're all, you know, of a certain, you know, they're black folks. They get it. And I thought that was what made it a lot more palatable for me, right? Yeah, it was not, the dialogue was not, it didn't feel like them reading from, you know, a play, right? Like you can tell that they understood sort of these characters.
I was
very happy with the number of times I heard, "I ain't studying you." That's my favorite saying.
Yeah, several times.
Maybe in life, "I ain't studying you." Yeah. I love that saying.
That's
so
an old school diss.
I really appreciate what Denzel is doing with his production company in that he's giving access to Broadway to people who would normally not have access. This is something I never would have known about. So I appreciate so much, like Fences and whatever's next project. But
he's got this very unique relationship with Walker Mosley, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's and with August.
And George C. Wolfe and all them, yeah.
Work.
Yeah, it's like a squad of them. And Viola, there's like a squad of them, Broadway-trained people that are now bringing this to film.
To that point, there's also on Netflix a short August Wilson monologue competition. Mm-hmm. And I think it's
that's him, August Wilson, that's at Walter Mosley, because I just saw his masterclass. That's why I got him on my mind.
But it's Mom and I watched it after we watched the movie, and I thought it was a great watch to get a little background on August if you're not familiar. What was always interesting to me about August Wilson is that normally when you think of playwrights who are like these massive, storytellers of Americana, like they're long gone, much older, you know, or something like that. And August was fairly contemporary. Mm-hmm. And he looked like a cat that maybe would have hung out like with my folks, you know what I'm saying? Like just normal dude. But it gives a little background on him, but also like to see these kids in all these different cities, like dive into his work and why.
Yeah.
And Viola and Denzel are in it as well, talking about why he's important, you know, why his work is important. And, I can't remember this guy's name, but he's in some Spike stuff. He was in Fences. You'll know him when you see his face, but he's another stage to screen Black actor, an older one. But it's a good watch if you want to get a little deeper into just why Wilson's, and it talks about the decade series, why it's so important. You know, the August is, the century series, I mean, August is 10, no, is it 10 plays? 10 plays. Is it 10 plays that?
Yeah, it's the, I think it's the Pittsburgh cycle or something like that.
It's called the century cycle.
Yeah, it's a play for every decade of the 19th century.
Okay.
So it goes into like the importance of the entire like century cycle. Yeah.
All right. So we're gonna lighten it up before we get up out of here. So I want to know, what's everybody's favorite Christmas album? Bun, since you're the guest, you go first. No, more song, whatever. It could be album, song, whatever you want to do. Favorite Christmas, whatever music thing. What's your favorite?
I mean, I don't know if I really have a dog in this race, but I do know that when we have family over, like, there's this overwhelming need to play this. There's an Ashanti Christmas album.
Really? I didn't even know that existed. Really?
It's like some Ashanti Christmas music that everybody, my sister.
Not what I was expecting you to say.
Meanwhile, Eagle was choice. Yep, that's me, the one.
For me, I'm with the Jackson 5, right?
Okay, yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I knew it was Christmas time when my mom would pull out that vinyl Jackson 5 Christmas album.
I mean, right now, Pariah is the only Christmas song that matters. And it's the only, new Christmas song.
You're right. Go ahead, Inka, you second.
I will say Jackson 5 Christmas album is up there. My mom used to play The Whispers. They have
records. Not mad at that. Not mad at your mom.
Oh, you just fucked it up. That's all I'm finna be playing. The Whispers.
I'm on Apple right now. We finna get this popping today.
I'm about to look for it. I love me some Walter's Piety.
I mean, but we got to give, I think whenever we heard those first three chords, that In My Mind from the Temptations, coming back from Christmas. So
Merry Christmas.
For those three. I can't narrow it down to one, but.
Yeah, it don't have to be one. You know what I'm saying?
My mom also said it made her very sad to always hear the Jackson 5 one because she knew they didn't celebrate Christmas. So she was
weird, right?
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Barry and they went hard on that Christmas album.
Barry didn't care. Barry was getting money. And Joe
was about that bag, baby. Exactly. Joe was about that bag.
Do whatever we got to do.
Castle, you be all right. Go on in there. The boys got to do this singing now.
You go on the temple, and we'll be ready when you get back. Go ahead, bro.
Go ahead, bro. Joe Jackson in Vegas, and he was like, Joe Jackson is a pimp.
Wait, what? Say that again, bro?
Like the pimp used to always talk about meeting Joe Jackson. He met Joe Jackson in Vegas.
Did he?
Yes. And as he was like, yo, Joe Jackson is a pimp. He had the pimp things with him. That boy got Mike Money over there. He balling.
that story was worth the whole episode.
Pimp, he always said Joe Jackson. He said the two biggest players he ever met was Joe Jackson and Nick Cannon.
Wow.
I've been trying to tell people about Nick. Nick.
I think we know about
Nick. Nick about that action. That whole Nick's a chump shit is a fallacy.
Nick's got.
I don't think people have really said that for years though. Not since he's been grown. Definitely not since Mariah.
Nick about all that action.
My favorite is definitely Temptations. You know, Silent Night. But I'm also a Temptations stan, so. That's a little different for me, right? But also, I would say my second favorite is probably Merry Christmas, Baby, Charles Brown.
That's my mama's joint.
That's the old school joint. Give me a little yak.
Little Brown.
It's Merry Christmas. It's not even Christmas. It's Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. You know, I'm like nice. I'm not drunk. But
I feel good. I'm feeling good, though. Nice.
I got my little, whip a whistle.
I ain't feeling no pain.
I will say, as I got old, there was a song that my parents used to play every year, and I never understood it until I got grown. Now it was Christmas Comes But Once a Year. And on the song, it's like, it takes the next 6 months to pay these bills. Every time I think about it, it's I don't care, because Christmas comes but once a year. And I didn't understand the song at all as a kid.
And now,
as I get older, everybody's sitting around your house, opening up all these presents and wrapping papers all over the house. And I'm just kind of sitting at the table like, I funded this whole function. Yeah,
I paid this whole shit. I had to work a double shift to get these last three gifts, but whatever.
Hey, and one other thing too, my favorite group, the Hamiltones.
Yes.
They did a little Christmas album. I think it's about seven songs, so it's really short and sweet. But you know, they're doing their Hamiltones thing. But most of all, it's like an incredible, incredible record. That's definitely on my holiday playlist right now.
Okay. Go ahead, you next.
Tectonics every year. I'll take the Hamiltones.
So depending on mood, you know, my favorite classic R&B joints, I just got to put all the Motown Christmas albums together because they're all phenomenal. Stevie's joint.
Stevie's shit hot too.
Stevie's Someday at Christmas is flawless.
I forgot about the Supremes.
My favorite things, amazing. The Temptations Christmas, amazing. I listen to the Jacksons Christmas stuff the least, actually. But then if I'm on a jazz side, which is what we had in my house growing up, it's Nancy Wilson's The Christmas Waltz all day, every day. It's my favorite Christmas song. Okay. It has been since I was a kid because it was mom's favorite Christmas song. So it was on often in my head. And I also love Nancy's What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? Yeah.
Okay. So mine is...
Oh, but wait, one more. I'm sorry. Because Bum was talking about songs he didn't understand until he got older. When I hit about 25, all of a sudden I found myself having an affinity for Lou Rawls Christmas songs. I didn't like Lou Rawls when I was a kid. I think you have to be an adult to appreciate
that. Yeah, that vocal tone, you got to be grown. Understand,
yeah, you
got to
be shit. grown.
my favorites are, I love Let It Snow by Boyz II Men and Brian McKnight. I love that record. Like, I just, you know, when Wanya do his strained vocal at the end. I love James Brown, Santa Claus Goes Straight to the Ghetto.
Yep.
Just for the energy. I really like, I think we talked about this before too, South Soul Christmas, South Soul Orchestra got a Christmas album. They got this song called Christmas Time Is Here. Christmas Time Is Here.
It's here. Was it Wonderful Christmas?
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I love that shit.
It's Christmas Time Is Here.
Yeah,
that thing.
I love that.
All this shit.
Yeah, all that shit. The whispers, the temps, you can't beat the temps.
Guaraldi Trio. I forgot. The Charlie Brown joints.
Oh, yeah. Charlie Brown. Oh, Charlie Brown Christmas. Well, I was going to go next. Your favorite Christmas show. And that might be my favorite Christmas, like, you know, cartoon. That, I don't know. The Grinch. Grinch is classic shit, too, man. I'm Mr. Heat Miser. I'm Mr. Hot.
Haven't seen Heat Miser in so long.
That's classic material. Frosty the Snowman. Rudolph, all of those, what is it, Bassett, Rankin and Bass cartoons? Yeah. Like,
do they still show? I know they still show Charlie Brown, but do they show all that stuff?
I used to love the Claymation. I think Inga just said, yeah, I used to love the Claymation shit. Yeah. Who was it, Burl Ives used to?
Burl Ives. It's my nigga right there, man. Peace to Burl Ives and his family. It's hard to pick one. It's hard to pick one, man. I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to pick one. But y'all go next. My fault. Who's your favorite? What's your favorite Christmas cartoon or movie or whatever?
In my house, we watched Santa Claus the Movie, which came out, I think, in 1980 or 1981 with Dudley Moore as an elf.
Really?
And they had magical reindeer, and there was like a homeless kid, and
Yo, you got all the gems. Inga got all the undergrounds.
I love Christmas.
I'm literally typing this shit in my phone.
Santa Claus the Movie stars Dudley Moore, and it's my brother and I. Like, I think like the first couple minutes of the movie, like it always brings me to tears because we've been watching that since the movie came out. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those really special things. That, and I forgot a song. New Edition's Give Love on Christmas Day.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I like just Johnny's version. Johnny sang the shit out of that.
Oh, I don't think I've heard that.
Yeah, Johnny has his own version.
It's not on my list.
All right, Bun, what's yours? What's your favorite Christmas movie, television show, whatever?
Easily Rudolph. Like the Claymation Rudolph, though.
Yeah. The that's incredible.
I was always like astounded by just the idea of claymation, how long it takes to make this stuff and create it. I didn't really understand it as a younger person. I just thought it was really neat. I was like, how do they make these dolls move and talk? Mm-hmm. Like, it was obvious they were dolls, but just the way they were to do it and do like paint the little mouths and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
It was dope. But yeah, Burl Ives, I mean, that was always a big deal for me. Whenever I saw the fat snowman with the vest on and shit, I was like, ready now.
It's lit. It's lit.
It's popping right
now. Nye, what's yours?
You know, I think it's A Christmas Story. I think it is. And it might just be out of
is tradition. That's with the
kids. With Ralphie and the BB gun.
Yeah, Ralphie. Oh, yeah. That's classic material.
I think it's A Christmas Story. Because I've watched that, you know, I don't know if TBS still does, but for years, they just ran it 24 hours.
Yeah.
And we would just always have it on in the house during, even though I think I was an adult when they started that, we would just always have it on in the house during that time. Like that, I really, and my mom loves that movie too, which is probably why I love it so much. But yeah, I think that's it.
And what about Duke Home Alone? You consider it a Christmas movie?
I know Home Alone that was based is a around Christmas, Christmas movie, but like to me, it's just a movie that happens at Christmas. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't consider Home Alone a Christmas movie. I consider it a movie that's set.
But it is a Christmas movie. I don't know why we have this argument.
But so is Die Hard. Like, whatever. I don't consider.
I was about to say, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Because it's all built around the story of family coming together for the holidays and overcoming circumstances to get to be together for the holiday. Right? That's what it's all about. The whole if that's why it can't happen.
I'm not
gonna argue.
I'm just saying. It's not for me.
It doesn't work. Like Home Alone is a Thanksgiving movie. It doesn't work. Like it because it's about overcoming everything for Christmas.
To get to Christmas.
To get to Christmas with loved ones, not just to get to
With family.
You're right.
Can we do an honorable mention for like the Temptations? Like don't they always show like the Temptations miniseries?
Oh, yeah.
And the Jacksons, a family.
Yeah, like over the last probably 10 years, they've been beating that up on like USA or some
shit. That's good. I got to look for
TNT
that.
TNT somewhere.
It's one of them, right? They like the Temptation. Every time I'm at somebody, not in my house, but if I go like to my in-laws or something.
They got that on.
Temptations is on.
Okay, yeah, but they should. We need our own shit too. I started watching Jingle Jangle. I ain't finished it yet.
But we loved it. We didn't love the music though. The music
I didn't know it was going to be such a. I didn't realize it was such a big production. It was almost like watching
beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful production.
Beautiful.
It's almost like watching a Dr. Seuss movie in real life. It's like watching the Dr. Seuss cartoon.
Yeah, like pop up books. It's like watching pop up.
Pop up book exactly.
Yeah.
Did anybody watch the Mariah? Special?
The new special. No, I was on something.
I've been watching a bunch of little raggedy Christmas movies on TV1 and BET though with all the black stars.
I saw Christmas with Mary. That was
cool. It was I mean, they're not great, but you know they're cute. The plot don't make no guy. I've been watching the ones on Lifetime. I've been watching the Hallmark ones. None of them make any sense. It's like this doesn't make any fucking sense. But it's Christmas, so at the end everybody ends up happy, and that's all that matters.
The Mariah one, I don't watch it.
It wasn't good?
Wow.
Okay. All right. We love you, Mariah.
It's an hour of sitting around and everybody in the show. It's the whole show is built around waiting for her to sing the song. In order to save Christmas. It's,
it's
rough.
Yeah, it's a tough watch.
But it's perfect for families because they've got like the Muppets are in it. And there's a Peanuts segment.
Oh,
you
got a peanut
like, love that. It's super, I don't know, maybe it's just me. It wasn't for me. You definitely need little kids around to justify sitting through the whole thing.
Okay. Oh, that's the other. We didn't even mention the Charlie Brown Christmas.
I thought we did. I thought we started. No,
the music, and we didn't actually mention the show with the little Christmas tree that bends over.
The sad little Christmas tree.
So, all right, guys. So we wanted to wrap it up on a nice light note. Everybody be safe out there. I don't know if we'll tape next week. We'll see. Maybe
we're not taping next week.
Yeah, we're not taping next week. We'll be back in January. Everybody wear their masks and be safe out here. Bun, thank you as always for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Please tell Miss Queenie we say Merry Christmas.
Yes. Please tell the Queen that we all say Merry Christmas and a Merry Christmas for me too. Mm-hmm. Oh, let me just tell a quick Bun story. It's very short. It's very light.
Here we go.
It's not embarrassing. It's not embarrassing.
I don't have many embarrassing stories.
Yeah, no, you're not that type of guy. You don't move like that. But there's certain people that I've been fortunate enough to meet and become real friends with. I mentioned Short and 40 previously. Mm-hmm. Bun is obviously another one, and who have the city where they live, for lack of a better term, on lock. Right? Yes. Like if I'm with Bun in Houston, I'm Gucci anywhere. I could literally ask Bun to take me to meet the mayor, literally, right? No, for real, and he would do it, and we could go to the most down bottom barbecue spot, some niggas cooking in the yard, and we Gucci, right?
Right.
So I was in Houston for work, so whatever, it doesn't matter. I was down there working a couple years ago, and of course I called Bun. I always call Bun when I go to Houston, and so I went ahead going to the gym. I said, "Yo, I'm about to go get something to eat." He said, "Yo, I'm gonna meet you. I'll meet you. Me and Queen gonna come meet you." So we went, of course, went to Nye's favorite, Papa Do's.
To Papa Do's.
Where else would you go? We sitting there talking. And shit. Yeah, we're sitting there talking, we're having our food, we're having a good, you know, good old time, right? So then, you know, I don't, you know, when the bill comes, like, I'm going to pay it, man. I got the corporate card. And the waitress says, no. It's already paid for. I was like, what are you talking about? We didn't pay yet. He's like, no, somebody in here paid for your meal because they saw a bun.
That's amazing.
Like, I was like, what? Bum was like, yeah, it happens all the time. Like, we barely ever pay for anything when we go to
eat.
He wasn't saying it bragging. He was just like, yo, this is kind of wild. This happens.
I already know if I go to certain places and eat lunch, like, if the proprietor of the establishment isn't going to give it to us free, somebody usually pays for us to eat lunch. And it's really just because of what we give to the city.
Of course, like, of course. You've earned it.
I'm a rapper, right? But we move through the city very differently.
Right, you do a lot of work for you.
Yeah, we're afforded, you know, connections with, you know, the mayor and the police chief and all these different people. And we don't, like, I don't call the mayor when I get a speeding ticket or some shit like that, which I get periodically. When Queenie says I'm the worst driver in the world, she might be right. But we always use it to help someone else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, we always go out of our way, try to help other people. Because my life is crazy. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I've seen things. I've seen things. I've been places. I know people. I was never supposed to have this life. Or maybe I was. I just didn't realize it. Right? Mm. But, I mean, every time I look up, like, my life is crazy. Like, had COVID not happened, right? My friend's dad is the biggest insurer in the world, right? Really? He's like above the title, like sponsor for the Olympics. They were going to us on their private jet to the Olympics.
To Tokyo.
And give us tickets to wherever we wanted to go. Like any sport.
That's crazy.
So you could have
Is this the same guy? Because you're friends with the guy who runs Gumball, right?
Yeah. But this is a different guy. This is a guy that does Gumball. Okay. Like, that's what his dad does for a living.
Okay.
The largest insurer in the world.
That's bonkers. Right. Sidebar, I don't think people know this, but Bun actually married Eve.
To the guy who runs Gumball. By the way, shout out to Eve for her father-in-law being the largest insurer in the world.
Yeah, but
Bun, not his dad.
Not his dad. Okay.
Yeah, but Bun officiated the marriage. He actually married them. Like, he was.
That's why I love that.
That's so lovely.
Crazy, yeah. Like NBs on the ocean, and like paparazzi were in the ocean on boats, like shooting us from these crazy photo lenses. Because there was only like 14 of us at the wedding. Like, they didn't have many people at the wedding. It was basically his parents, his children, and she had like her brother and her grandmother, who had never flown on a plane before in her life.
Wow!
Her first flight was to Ibiza.
Shout out to Black grandmas.
Her first flight was to Ibiza. that's kind of nice.
That's beautiful.
That's the way to jump it off.
That's the way to pop it off. So yeah, man. So again, Bun, thank you, man. I love you, man. Thank you for coming. You know, happy holiday to you and the queen and the grandkids and the kids and everybody.
Bun, are you teaching this? Are you still teaching?
No, I haven't taught probably in about 3 semesters because I decided to get back into recording actively. Mm. And it doesn't really work for me doing both.
Mm.
You know, it's a lot, like forming lectures, because, you know, I pretty much
teach for real. Lectures. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I heard somebody reference you. Ninth Wonder was talking in Clubhouse, encouraging producers, DJs, et cetera, to, in the spirit of teaching, carrying on legacy, telling stories, to look into the inroads into academia the way he is, and he referenced you as well as you know, two of you guys who are actually doing it, not like popping in and doing a class every once in a while, but literally like putting together a curriculum.
It's a lot, man. It really is a lot, you know. And I didn't go to college, so I didn't really have a true frame of reference for how the dynamic is in the class. And plus, I had, like, my first year I taught, I had 150 students.
Right.
That's a big-ass class.
Big-ass. I mean, we were in one of the mini auditoriums on campus. And so I jumped in very heavy and very deep, but I was committed. I was, you know, extremely committed to the process. Yeah. And I that was one thing that I had to make a conscious decision about. I was like, yo, we can't work like while we do this. Like, I would give myself maybe like going from 3 shows, 4 shows on a weekend. I was like, yo, I'll work Friday, maybe Saturday. You know what I'm saying? And we did it for a while. And it didn't pay a lot either because I have no tenure. I can't gain tenure based on my position. So I'm making crumbs, but it was amazing.
It was rewarding though.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because I'm affording an opportunity for people who have no idea. Like, let's keep in mind, I'm at a private, mostly white university, right? So most of them don't even really technically listen to rap.
Right.
In the way that we do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not their popular music, but people wanted to know more about the culture. Like, I had business students who wanted to know about hip hop culture. Like, we're going into sports. So right. We're going to obviously be looking to represent people of color. We should understand them better culturally.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know?
We love that.
I got that. I'm like, yo, I want to make sure that for people who want to understand the culture in that way to make a better connection with black people, oh, it's inherent. I got to teach the shit out of this class.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's a humanities course, right? So it's not just, I'm not just teaching about hip hop. I'm also teaching about religion too. So I got to do all the back work on that as well. So it's not just talking about Jay-Z's book or some shit like that or Jesus Walks. Like, it's a very deep conversation and it's very unique to the classroom. So, and it evolves, right? Because like when we started, we didn't have like Kendrick, we didn't have Chance, you know what I'm saying? So the conversation, we have a lot more frames of references to draw from, but then we also have different entry points for the students into the conversation.
Yeah.
It's dope. I can't front. The class is dope.
Yeah.
All right. What a privilege to take that class. Wow.
All right, man, we're going to wrap it up on that note. Y'all be safe and we'll see y'all next week. We'll see y'all next year.
We'll see y'all next year. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy all that. And all thank that. You again.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.